Well, as exciting as the 68-game regular season was, coming right down to the very end before the playoff matchups were determined, we get to throw it all out the window now and focus on the games that really matter. When 16 teams advance, four teams go home and play in that draft lottery, and we get to really meaningful OHL action. My name is Mike Farwell on Twitter at Farwell_OHL. That guy over there, Dan Mahar, at Dan Mahar on Twitter or X, whatever it is we're calling it these days. Before we get into how these playoffs are going, Dan, and I would probably argue that they're kind of going true to form early on after the first weekend, but we should touch on that draft lottery where, for the second consecutive year, the Niagara Ice Dogs come in with the best chance and don't end up with the first overall pick.
It's a funny thing, eh? Because as soon as it, probably the worst outcome from an optics standpoint, because then you get all the conspiracy theorists, right, saying, oh, it's, this is punishment for Niagara, for the off ice issues and the ownership. And let me be clear, I don't think there's any shenanigans going on here. I think this is just pure bad luck. But hey, Niagara, you're at least you finished fourth. That sounds okay, right?
No? Yeah, sure. It sounds better than the alternative, which of course is, hey, Niagara, you finished dead last for a second consecutive year. But see, this is, Dan, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Of course, this is above board, right? But the fact that so many people at least have the impression that it's not above board just makes me shake my head a little bit. Listen, you don't have to like it, but I think you have to appease that rather noisy chorus of voices that are telling you they don't think this is above board, or they're not convinced it is. And then just show them, like, how hard would it be? And it's usually the National Hockey League kind of learning things from or testing things in the Canadian Hockey League. How hard would it be for the OHL to take a bunch of balls with team names on them, show us, you know, Niagara gets 10, Windsor gets 8, whatever, however the math works out, and you pour them into a big machine. Is Faye Dance still available from the old Winterio days? Like, just, and then do it that way, and as opposed to this computer-generated outcome that we are all just supposed to accept at face value. Again, I'm sure it's on the up and up, but throw us a bone here, OHL.
whenever you do a lottery like this, that's always the rub, is it not? Is so I know with the NHL, they do their draft lottery as a TV event, and they want to make it this big deal, and I guess they use the excuse of sometimes logistics make it hard to explain exactly how they did it behind the scenes, and they get all kinds of criticism. Well, it was fixed, it was rigged, they wanted Chicago to have Bedard, yada yada yada. So I'm with you though, Mike. More transparency the better, because I don't believe for a second this is fixed, there's anything going on. But how hard would it be just to show that? Show them placing the balls in the machine. Make that part of the event. Do what you've got to do to take away that narrative, because it's a cool event for the league. It draws some attention. It drums up interest in those four markets that aren't getting playoff games. Just take away the narrative that it was something hinky going on.
For the record, back in 2023, it was Niagara, Erie, Sioux, and Kingston with the best odds in descending order. And it turned out to be Erie going from 2-1, Niagara going from 1-2, Sioux and Kingston staying in the same spots at 3-4. And Erie used that first overall pick to take Matthew Schaefer, who's playing in this year's playoffs with the Otters against the Kitchener Rangers. This year, it was even worse for the Ice Dogs. As you said, Dan, how does it sound to say you finished fourth? Well, I guess, but when you had the best chances going in and you get the lowest of those possible lottery picks, Windsor goes from second to first. Sarnia goes from fourth potentially to second. So they move up the most. Peterborough holds that third spot, which was their odds coming in. And Niagara slides from 1-4. The only other thing I would say about this is if, and I'm not even sure I should go down this path because we have both agreed that this is on the up and up, but if there was such a thing as, you know, manipulating something so that a franchise that has, in all honesty, struggled off the ice, has been sanctioned recently, etc., if there is a desire to not send the first overall pick to the Niagara Ice Dogs, you are acknowledging that there are some problems there you would like to see rectified. I don't know. Here's an idea. Rectify them. work with the team and try to work out those kinks, to put it mildly, in the market. And then we can all just move on and have the kind of transparency we're looking for in the draft lottery.
For sure. And you know, with all the negativity that has surfaced around Niagara in the last little while, I think I'd like to point to a positive for the fans of Niagara. As last year, you were able to draft Ryan Rubric and convince him to show up. And what a year he had, what a future he has. So first, fourth, doesn't matter a ton, but it is a silver lining for Niagara. And I'm also happy for the fans in Sarnia for moving up two spots there. It's a little thing at an end of a season like this, but I think we can both agree, Mike, that they were expected to miss the playoffs, but they put up a heck of a fight right to the finish with Flint. They had a lot of health problems, still managed to fight to the end. So I like to see teams get rewarded for that fight to the bitter end. There was no tank there. They did what they had to do, and now they're going to get the second overall pick. So something to look forward to in those markets.
Dan, GM Dylan Cica in Sarnia, I think, did a pretty decent job of moving assets at the trade deadline to bring in younger pieces. They've already got some nice pieces in their core, younger. And I'll add to this, Sarnia, one of those markets that had pretty nice fan support, despite being in a full-fledged rebuild after making a run for it a season ago. So yeah, I would agree with you on the reward that comes their way by jumping from potentially fourth pick all the way up to getting the second pick this time around. So the draft is coming up. Dan and I will talk about the OHL Cup and some of those prospects, because there is some high-end talent, let's say, in this year's OHL draft coming up in about a week's time. Before we get into that, let's focus on a player who was the subject of considerable conversation on this podcast last week, because he was involved in an incident in a regular season game that led to a 5-game suspension for Kitchener Rangers forward Trent Swick. And our argument last week was, the OHL has already set the precedent. You can suspend a player for regular season games, but that shouldn't carry over into the playoffs. Of course, Swick's suspension does carry over into the playoffs. He's not back until game 4 of this series with the Otters in round number 1. But the player that sparked it all was Max Namestnikov of the Guelph Storm. He lays a hit on Rangers rookie defenseman Cameron Reed, who got injured, left the game. There was no penalty on the play. Swick jumps Namestnikov, yada, yada, yada. Oh, game 1 of the playoffs, Guelph and Sault Ste. Marie, Max Namestnikov levels Jack Beck of the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. Beck leaves the game, does not return, and the OHL, about 24 hours later, a 4-game suspension for Max Namestnikov. I would argue to you, Dan, that's like an 8-game suspension in regular season games, right? Because we kind of look at the playoffs as 2-for-1. What do you make of this?
Well, right off the bat, I'll say a couple things. I didn't like the hit. I thought it was a player in a vulnerable position, looking the wrong way. Circumstances unfolded poorly as well. Jack Beck kind of dropped low to his knees, so the head took the full brunt of the shot, and he's not okay. And you don't want these skilled players, these important players, out of the games, out of the playoffs, from hits like that. So I think it's full value. That's a harsh suspension, 4 games, the bulk of a playoff series for a player of his caliber. I will also add that I didn't like the response either. Spencer Evans had what I felt was a vicious cross-check to the face of Namestnikov later, was penalized, but probably well worthy of a suspension there as well. But I understand it. The emotions run high. These players are, you know, you see one of your best players taken out, you respond. Clearly, Max Namestnikov is a player that gets under the skin of the other teams. I'm not at ice level to know what's being said, what's being done. But like you said, you start to see these common denominators, right? You see a lot of them in the NHL, you see a few of them in the OHL, where they seem to be at the epicenter of all these incidents. And that's not to justify any actions that are outside of the rules, but definitely some nastiness in that series and some resulting punishments, which are really going to hurt the team long-term.
Are you trying to bait me here? Is that what's happening? Because when you talk about that response from Spencer Evans, which I don't disagree with, and it's curious that he got away with so little after all is said and done, but you mentioned you like the response. Well, I could go back to the story we spent some time on last week with Trent Swick responding to the hit on his teammate And Swick gets the 5-game suspension, but I'm not going there. You're not trying to bait me. I know. The interesting thing is, and I agree with you completely, it did look like a cross-check by Spencer Evans to the face of Max Namestnikov. He was only assessed 2 minutes for high sticking on the play, for what it's worth. On the hit, I got to be honest with you, and this is where I struggle, and we kind of alluded to this last week with the game being almost re-refereed, re-officiated after the fact on video, but with the benefit of watching it on video, at first I thought, okay, it looks a lot different once you start slowing it down than when it's played at normal speed. Remember, there wasn't even a penalty to Namestnikov on the play, I don't believe. Or was, no, there was. There was a penalty to Namestnikov on the play. Yeah. But at speed, it actually, I thought, looked even worse than when you start to slow it down. And what really stood out to me is the fact that the puck was gone for as long as it was, right? Probably a couple of beats before Namestnikov hits. I think Beck dropping to his knee, and then what's a player really to do? Because at that point, he's barely above Namestnikov's waist. But I still think that what we have here is clear contact to the head. Definitely after the puck had left the player's stick. So you've got blindside written all over this as far as I'm concerned. And then no disrespect to Max Namestnikov, but he plays the game on that line, and probably reputationally the league is stepping in here and maybe even acknowledging, look, this player was at the center of some controversy at the end of the regular season. We're just going to put it all to bed here early in the playoffs. And now Namestnikov could return for a game six if there is one in this round with the Guelph Storm. And unfortunately, the Storm, I think personally, they showed their best in game number one. It was a 1-goal game. They had the lead after the first period before the Sioux got their legs. I predicted last week on this podcast it would be a relatively short series. Guelph would play them hard, but they're down 2-0. Even getting to a game six is going to be a lot of work for the Guelph Storm right now.
And without a guy like Namestnikov too, who's a spark plug on their power play as well, that's a key piece. So, and that comes back to my original point too, but when you're about to make those hits, I think what sets it apart for me, making them a little worse than ones that wouldn't be suspendable, is when the player had a choice, had a clear choice, had some time, and still delivered the cross check, the hit, whatever it was. And in Namestnikov's case, the biggest problem I had with it was the fact that Jack Beck was not looking at him at any point. So there was a clear window there where he had the choice, do I deliver this hit or not? And chose to. And now you have a team like the Guelph Storm who had quite a bit of fight, really had a lot of potency in that lineup. I think could have given Sue a pretty hard time in this series, but now there'd be severely behind the eight ball because of that action. So again, just making players think twice before they act.
It's exactly what you want from a situation like this. Based on what you just said, Dan, you've got me thinking. You have a choice here, right? I know the game is played at such incredible speed. I know the game is played with passion, but maybe the next time when there is that opportunity, a penalty as stiff as this is enough deterrent to make Max Namestnikov reconsider, or any other player. Obviously, that's what you're hoping to achieve when you get to supplemental discipline. So as we talk about sort of off the ice league discipline, before we even get into the first weekend that was the playoffs, I want to go to an email that we got from Johnny last week. Johnny's listening from Kingston, loves the show, and we're so happy to hear that he does. But he writes the following to ohlpodcast@rogers.com. Hey guys, huge fans. A huge fan. Always look forward to sitting down on Tuesday night. You guys do a great job, which is awesome. This podcast comes out every Tuesday and Johnny's listening to it right away. It's why I felt the need to reach out, he writes, for the first time, and sadly express my disappointment. So much excitement in the last week of play. I couldn't wait after Sunday for the Tuesday show. How many times in league history was the bracket pending on the very last two games of the year? It took all 68 games to determine the rankings. My bias towards Kingston, but beating Brantford North Bay to end the season. Oshawa you touched on, but man, what a finish. London and Saginaw and so on. All to say is the last thing anyone wanted to listen to last week was a bitch fest on rules and refs. All good points, but was just not the right time. I almost turned the podcast off and would have missed some great stuff at the end. Just providing some honest feedback. Keep up the great work. I love the show. John. Johnny, appreciate that. Dansky, thoughts?
Yeah, first off, thanks, Johnny, for following, for the kind words and fair points. You know, sometimes, Johnny, when we get talking discipline and officiating, it's a rabbit hole. And I'll be the first to admit that sometimes that you go a lot further down it than you initially intended. I think probably Mike and I, we both did a bit of that last week. We're fired up about some of these things, but you're absolutely right about the focus on the ice and the games and what a finish. Both conferences, like a historic season, probably in Eastern Conference for how tight it was coming down to the bitter end. So absolutely fair points. Appreciate the feedback, Johnny.
Yeah, so let me draw back the curtain a little bit here. Dan and I record these episodes on the Monday night before releasing them on Tuesday morning, just for the record. So we have full transparency here. We're actually recording this one on the Sunday evening because of my travel schedule for the playoffs this week. So if something wild happened on Monday night and we're not talking about it when you get this episode on Tuesday, that's why. We're doing this end of action on Sunday. But what happens then is we finish the recording, I package it together, and we release it the following morning. And I will admit that when I packaged it all together after our recording last week, I thought, boy, we did end up going on for a decent length of time, not really intended. Dan and I go back and forth on text messages. Hey, let's talk about this. Let's talk about that. Then we sit down and do the recording. And I think you put it perfectly, Dan. It's a bit of a rabbit hole. Now, when I responded to Johnny via email, I said this to him, and I'll say it here. Like, I totally get the point, and he's so right. What an exciting finish to the season. Comes down to the last day before we determine any of the playoff matchups. And so, yeah, that's the story you want to hear. That's what fans are excited about. And what I would argue is, I'm sorry, but the Ontario Hockey League kind of forced us into something here by disciplining the way that it did, right? And we don't need to go back. You can go back and listen to that episode if you want to, but we thought they set one precedent and then they changed it with the Swick suspension. That said, there was still a lot of it there. Might have gone on longer than we intended because of that rabbit hole. And Johnny, fair comment all around. Love that you love the show. And here we are now with the first weekend of playoff action to talk about. And the Nemestikov suspension did happen in the playoffs. So I guess we can get to more of the meat on that playoff bone as we move forward. But we love getting the feedback, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. Good, bad, or otherwise, Dan and I are here to hear it. It's what it's all about.
For sure. And while we have Johnny on the spot here, so to speak, Kingston, can I just mention Kingston? Because no. I'm a big Kingston lover too. And I had them putting up a huge fight in the first round, and the first two games have not made me look very good. So I don't know, Mike, I'm not trying to throw you off script here, but can we start with Kingston North Bay and ask you what your take is so far there?
Well, it's kind of the way I figured it would go, right? I think let me look back. I had North Bay in five. You had North Bay in seven. Yeah. So, I mean, look, I'll talk about the market. I've always loved it. Going on that Eastern swing through Kingston and Ottawa is something I've always enjoyed. I've always scratched my head about why, even with really good teams, the Fronts haven't been able to draw better. They've got a beautiful arena in a beautiful city, but for whatever reason, and there are lots of, you know, speculated reasons out there as to why they don't draw as well as they could. But my big thing about the Fronts this year, as much as I like some of the stories there, we love some Ethan Miedema, right? We love some Jacob Battaglia, right? We're big fans of a lot of these players. We thought Corey Cooper did well, I think, in acquiring Roman Schmidt, adding some stability and some jam to the back end, etc. For me, and I always hate isolating this much because then, you know, I'm not trying to be hypercritical of a kid, but to me, the goaltending just wasn't there for Kingston. And perhaps that showed up best in game number two versus North Bay when the battalion hung a seven on the front. So look, still early in the series. This was a team that had intentions of competing for a championship this year because they were bidding for the Memorial Cup. I'd say they're another year or two away from something really solid. And one of the areas they're going to have to shore up is in goal, as far as I'm concerned.
That totally fair point. And I think that was a obvious sore spot when you look at the roster going into the playoffs. I just thought they did it, like you mentioned with Corey Cooper, I thought they did a lot at the trade deadline. I thought they were going to actually be a bit of a bear to play against with all things going right, when you know the Jacques Dubois acquisition at center, that guy's a beast on faceoffs. You talked about Roman Schmidt already. Paulo Ludwinski been carrying that team offensively a lot of the year, and Gabriel Frasca coming back mid-year when ramping up into form. I just thought this was going to be a tough team to beat, and not that I'm writing them off in any way yet. It's just two games that we've seen. Just a little disappointed with how non-competitive game two was, I suppose.
It takes time, and winning on the road is key in a playoff series. So if Kingston can come home and defend home ice, we'll see what happens from there. But good points on some of the other assets that the Kingston Frontenacs have to boast about this season, and we'll just see what it looks like. I also was as favored on North Bay as I was and as I am, is because I think the Battalion have some unfinished business to take care of this year. They went as far as they went last year. I thought they were going to be the East champions. Obviously, that didn't turn out when Peterborough took them out in game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. But you're returning a lot of that same cast with one of the best goaltenders in the game, et cetera, in North Bay. And I think because of that, they're a team that's really going to be difficult to get past for anybody in this Eastern Conference in these playoffs. Okay, we do have an OHL Cup winner to celebrate. Also some impressive U16s to look forward to that we already alluded to earlier in this episode. Plus, is Sudbury's statement the early story of these playoffs? That's something that I'm looking at as we continue with this episode of the OHL podcast. All right, Dan, the Oakville Rangers shut out the Vaughan Kings 1-0 to win the OHL Cup. And let me just give a rundown for you and our congratulations from the OHL podcast to Parker Vaughan, the Alliance Player of the Year with Elgin Middlesex, Adam Valentini with the Toronto Marlboros, the GTHL Player of the Year, Maximus Crete might be the best name in the U16 club, with the Upper Canada Cyclones, the HEO Player of the Year, Brady Cates from the Thunder Bay Kings. I used to work up in Thunder Bay, got a lot of love for Lake Superior and that community up there. The Hockey Northern Ontario Player of the Year. We've got Mason Walker from the Sudbury Wolves U16s as the Northern Ontario Player of the Year. Maddox Dagenet with the Quinty Red Devils, OMHA East Player of the Year. Ethan Belketz of the Oakville Rangers as the OMHA West Player of the Year. So just some of the highlights as released after Oakville shuts out the Vaughan Kings 1-0 to win the OHL Cup.
One of my favorite tournaments of the year, Mike, all levels of hockey. I just love it because you see not only the entire future generation of the OHL, the top kids are coming in next year, but just such a high level of competition. And for those of you who didn't have the chance to watch it, obviously the final game coming down to the Oakville Rangers and the vaunted Vaughan Kings, who were number one all year, and kind of what you'd expect. Vaughan probably carried the play a little bit, dominated in chances. Jacob Saranek, terrific in Oakville's net. You mentioned Ethan Belketz, who was the MVP of the tournament, won all-star team, you name it. Probably a top three pick in the OHL draft this year. Huge kid, can skate, got hands, was terrific. A number of the Oakville players were terrific in that game, especially Matthew Ross scoring the one and only goal on a power play in the second period to overcome that Vaughan team. And the Vaughan team, you look at Caleb Malhotra, had a terrific game, son of Manny. Just an outstanding lineup on that Vaughan team, probably four or five kids that could go first round. And friend of the podcast, we have Andrew Robinson, played a terrific game paired with highly touted Zach Nyman on the top pairing for Vaughan. Just a terrific hockey game, Mike, and a bit of an upset. And, you know, we kind of live to see these things. But yeah, just wanted to give a huge tip of the cap to all those kids that participate in that tournament. A few on other teams, lower rung teams, like you look at the Peterborough Petes, had quite an outing. There were a few teams that really shone in that tournament, and I'm guessing a few kids are going to leap a few rounds in the OHL draft coming up.
You mentioned Caleb Malhotra, and that's an interesting name because we touched on this last week with kids considering their options that might be outside of the Ontario or Canadian Hockey League, and Malhotra may end up out in the BCHL or who knows where. But I know my buddy Larry Malott, who's called Guelph Storm games since the Guelph Storm returned to the city, is pointing out that Malhotra may be in a draft eligible position where the Storm are picking. And of course, Dad Manny played for the Guelph Storm. So there's some family connections there. It's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes up and where a highly regarded prospect like Malhotra ends up going. One of the things I'm hearing, and by that I mean not just to which OHL team, but which league he ends up playing in, whatever league he and the family think is best for his development. One of the things that I'm hearing about this year's draft, and I love the players that you mentioned, and there is some pretty decent top-end talent, but it falls off pretty quickly after that in terms of what's coming out of this particular crop of U16. So, you know, you're going to have pretty good looks in your first rounders, but then you're really going to be digging and relying on scouting staffs to find the gems in the second rounds and beyond in this year's OHL draft. So it'll be interesting to watch that and see how these players develop. From what I'm hearing, we're projecting out a year to the 2025 draft as being a pretty good bumper crop for U16s to come into the Ontario Hockey League.
Yeah, consistent with what I'm hearing as well, Mike, and I think complicated further by the fact that, and we saw that Ken Campbell article you referenced that talked about Caleb Malhotra, there's as many as four of the top defensemen for this draft potentially eyeing other options other than the OHL. So I'll use, of course, the OHL podcast as our tiny little plug to say, don't think any of them can go wrong by reporting to this league and the various options they have. So I'm hoping that some of them will be convinced to come the OHL route because those are some really high-end defenders that are available. And if they choose this route, some team may get a steal, especially if other teams are a little get cold feet about drafting and they might fall a few slots. But I'm hearing the same things, Mike, and that the top round is pretty decent, but after that, it might thin out quickly.
We got to talk earlier about Guelph and Sault Ste. Marie, a series that we feel is kind of going according to form. We talk about it, of course, because of the Namestnikov suspension. He won't be back till game six if there is one. We kind of went off script and talked a little bit more about Kingston and North Bay. And as I alluded to a few minutes ago, for my money, early on, first weekend of playoff action, it's the Sudbury Wolves who have caught my attention. We talked about them going in. They certainly found their offense towards the end of the regular season. And then what do they do when they start the playoffs? Ho-hum, pitch a shutout and win 3-0, and then come from behind to win game two. So the Wolves, as a 5 seed, open with 2 wins on the road and go back to the Nickel City with a chance to finish out the Mississauga Steelheads. For me, Dan, maybe the series that's caught my attention the most after the first weekend, what say you about the Sudbury Wolves?
Well, when we did our predictions, Mike, and this was a tough one for me because I had thought Sudbury would win the conference. We always had that nagging feeling in the back of our heads that, you know, maybe they haven't really shown it though over the years. So I love the Mississauga Steelheads. So as you know, I picked them to come out of a long series here. And then of course knew full well that we could see this version of the Sudbury Wolves and they turn everything back on its head and make the statement. And yeah, who would have predicted a shutout for them in game one, right? That tells me that maybe they've hit the playoff stride. They made a bunch of acquisitions with playoffs in mind on the back end early in the year, and then adding to the front end later in the year and to be a playoff team, to be a physical team. And then, of course, we see a typical Sudbury game in game two, a shootout. But what really impressed me there was the Mississauga Steelheads came flying out of the gate, built 3-1 lead in the first period, got all the momentum again, and Sudbury battled back. And to me, this is junior hockey, right? This is what we love about it. But one of the things I'm noticing in a few of the series so far this year is do not take your foot off the gas for a second. No lead is safe, certainly not a 2-goal lead. But we see this all the time with teenage hockey players, right? Where you come out flying, you get some momentum, you start, things are feeling good on the bench, and then you start getting sloppy. You know, you maybe get out of position, you start gunning for that extra goal, you get caught. So things can turn on a dime here, and it's the teams that stay focused and keep their attention on the prize. And so far through two games, the Sudbury Wolves have done that, and kudos to them.
The turning point in game number two seemed pretty clearly to be the injury to goaltender Ryerson Leenders of the Mississauga Steelhead. So Leenders is in goal. The Steelheads are up 3-1. Uh-oh, Leenders goes down. And we touched on this last week too, Dan. I think as a tandem, Leenders and Ivan Kovic are about as good as it gets in the Ontario Hockey League. But suddenly, Ivan Kovic is coming into the game, his first ever OHL playoff game. He played well, but the Wolves would tie the game with just over a minute to play and then win it very early in overtime. Now, here's what I find really interesting, and that is Steelheads head coach James Richmond suggesting that the hit on Leenders was deliberate to get him out of the game. I think that this is the sort of gamesmanship that we see in the playoffs, and obviously you're going to stand up for your guy, but there's no question that the hit on Leenders or the injury to Leenders was a turning point in that game. Maybe it just took the wind out of the Mississauga Steelhead sails, but they've got a long road to climb now, and they're going to have to make this a Road Warriors series if they hope to extend it to at least the six games that both you and I had predicted it would go.
I think probably a coach's worst nightmare, Mike, coming into the playoffs is a number one goalie getting injured, getting bumped, getting run, getting hurt in any fashion. And without comment on the hit itself and what happened to Leenders, just the fact that a 2007 and Ivan Kovac has to come into a game cold halfway through in the playoff, his first ever playoff game against a high powered team, almost unfair, right? No matter how good Ivan Kovac has been and will be, that's a tough position. And you have to feel like the opponent knows that. The opponents know that in most series, and yeah, they're going to try and not necessarily injure guys, but they're going to do those things you need to do to tilt the series in your favor. And I think that the loss of Leenders is, I know he tried to battle and stay in. We're not 100% sure what the prognosis is for him, but what a massive blow that would be for the Steelheads who, like you said, Mike, rely heavily on goaltending this year. And Leenders just being a slightly more veteran guy was going to be the one to try and carry them past this series. So this is a big, like you said, a big turning point. Hopefully he can come back.
If you're a Sudbury Wolves fan, you got to love the fact that they're winning on the road. I know it's just one weekend and two games in, but as a five seed, right, it's likely as they move on in these playoffs, they're going to be the road team in the series that they're playing. So it'll be something I think that if you're a Sudbury fan, you can take some comfort in that they're already showing how to win on the road. You alluded earlier to something that you've noted in this first weekend of the playoffs. Don't take your foot off the gas. Don't take any team lightly. I think that speaks to the kind of parity that we saw around the league this year. We talked about it a number of times throughout the regular season on the OHL podcast. Anything else jump out to you in the first weekend of playoff action?
Probably a few things. I think this is the great thing about the play, having eight playoff series. There's probably something in each series that kind of catches your eye, right? But for me, it has been that. It's been the volatility throughout the games, I suppose. Like you look at the brief leads Owen Sound put up on Saginaw, Flint jumping out to a 3-1 lead over London with a quick flurry of goals. We see that in a few series, right, where Kitchener and Erie is another case where lead change where Kitchener had a lead and let it slip away. Maybe got a little, had two goal lead early in game two, maybe got a little ahead of themselves and started getting very sloppy. And so I think for me, that's the takeaway, Mike, in the series as I've been watching is that you just seeing that 60 minute focus. If you can get a team to play that 60 minutes and stay focused, that's going to be the recipe because the teams that aren't keeping their focus are paying the price because pucks end up in the net in a hurry in the OHL.
I think it's a really good point, Dan. And I think it also reinforces that what we're seeing here is how the good teams, the really good teams, are able to absorb those shocks within the game and trust the process, if you will. We hear that a lot, right? We're going to stick to the process. We're going to stick to our system, whatever the case may be. And as I already mentioned, I think Guelph's start in game one versus Sault Ste. Marie. I mean, look, they get to come home to the Sleeman Center. They're a good team there. It's a great crowd there. We'll see how games three and four go. But game one might have been the high watermark for the Storm in this series. I feel the same about Owen Sound and Saginaw. They start out, you know, guns a-blazing, but the Saginaw spirit withstand that, win game one, then they win game two a little more handily. I think your point on Flint versus London in game two is terrific, but you can just get the sense, especially on home ice, that what are the London Knights going to do? They're just going to London Knight you to death. They don't care if they're down 3-1 or 5-1. They seem to find a way because they trust the process. They stick to the system. And sure enough, the Knights and the Spirit and the Sioux Greyhounds all have 2-0 series leads. The other series that stood out to me, and I kind of quipped on Twitter that it was a bad time for the Jens winning streak to come to an end. I guess it certainly could have been worse, obviously, because it was game one as opposed to game four. But who saw the Barrie Colts coming in and knocking off the white hot? They weren't just red hot. The Oshawa Generals were white hot coming into the playoffs, and they get knocked off in game number one. I had the Jens in four and said last week it would be a 16 game winning streak for the Jens by the time the first round was done. That obviously went out the window right away. Two things I'll expand on. First of all, in game number one, a shout out to a kid from my hometown who used to play for the Rangers, Kyle Morey, who was in that deal that the Rangers made to get Olivier Savard and Edward Chalet from the Barrie Colts. Morey and Blair Scott, the warm bodies that went the Colts way, and a bunch of draft picks, eight in the final analysis. But Morey was out there for the Barrie Colts with Oshawa's net empty, protecting a one-goal lead late in game one. That's not a bad position for a kid who was a spare part in Kitchener to find himself in with the team that he's now on. The other thing is the end of game number two. It was a back-and-forth game between Barrie and Oshawa. Again, the Jens' home ice advantage, 12 straight wins coming into the playoffs. Barrie thought they tied the game with about 10 seconds to go. And after a review, the goal did not stand. I wasn't in the arena. What I've heard is that the puck crossed the line before the whistle was blown, but for whatever reason, it wasn't determined that way after the review. And do the Jens get away with one here? I don't know, but it's a 1-1 series. All I would add to it is that Barrie has obviously shown up to play. And as tight as the Eastern Conference was, I thought that Kingston and Oshawa would go rather quietly into the playoff night. And here you got the Barrie Colts, or I said, sorry, Kingston and Oshawa, Kingston and Barrie. And here you've got the Colts really making life difficult, at least through two games for the Oshawa Generals.
For sure. I think, you know, a month back, you would have looked at the Barrie Colts and said, yeah, it's going to be the easiest out in the playoffs, probably, just based on who they lost at the trade deadline, the way things were going, et cetera, and just running into this juggernaut with Oshawa. The reason I gave them a game in my predictions, Mike, was I think they found something down the stretch. There seemed to be a lot of compete in Barrie after the lineup kind of got solidified post-trade deadline. Things got sorted out. Players fell into roles. You referenced Kyle Morey and Blair Scott coming over from Kitchener, and they're never going to cheat you on work ethic. So you got players like that who want to grind it out. They're not going to quit on any shift. But I also like the top end. I mean, we talked about Cole Beaudoin being a great prospect for the upcoming draft, and Riley Patterson was on fire down the stretch. Bo Jelsma is another sharpshooter. And you go down the roster and you start thinking, you know, there's some ability there, and you can see how they pieced it together. So I didn't think that they were necessarily going to be the easy out again. So I thought, I'm going to toss them a game for sure. It's going to go five. They've been full value in the first two games, obviously won game one. Like you mentioned, from everything I heard, that goal probably should have counted to push that to overtime. That aside, the takeaway for me is Barrie's given Oshawa absolutely everything they can handle through two games in Oshawa in a tough building coming home. So who knows? I still think the Generals take that series, but full marks to Barrie so far. They're showing up.
Agreed completely. And I know this is a bit of an old saw, so I promise we won't spend a lot of time on it. But how would you feel, Dan? I started giving this some thought. How would you feel about 1 through 16 instead of 1 to 8 on each side? I just feel as though, because look, again, I loved Oshawa at the end of the regular season. I still think they're going to be a force. They'll write this, you know, little blip, and they'll win the first round. I think North Bay is a really strong team. I've already said this stuff. And who knows about Sudbury and some of those other teams in the East. You never write off Ottawa, Brantford, et cetera. But when you look through the regular season, it was London and it was Saginaw, and it was Saginaw and it was London. And I just feel as though it's kind of criminal that one of those teams will be eliminated before you get to an OHL final. And at minimum, if you're doing a 1-16 playoff where the conferences don't matter, you at least give yourself the chance of having the top two teams. They might come from the same conference, but so be it. But you have the chance of the top two teams playing in the OHL final. And I ran the matchups, what they would have been. Three of them would have been the same. Mississauga would still be playing Sudbury. That would have been your 8-9. Brantford would still be playing Ottawa. That would be your 7-10. And Kitchener would still be playing Erie. That would be your 6-11. But the 2-15 would give you Saginaw and Flint. Thank you very much. That wouldn't be so bad. You would end up with Oshawa Kingston as your 4-13. Not a little bad trip down there along the 401 in Eastern Ontario. I don't know. But I feel as though it's an easy change to make, and one that would, I think, maybe increase a little bit of excitement around the playoffs.
I'm for it for sure. I think the excuses not to do it, I think, are kind of weak. When you look at you're talking about series that wrap up in the course of a week to 10 days. Travel considerations aren't that significant in the OHL relative to their partners in Quebec, Maritime League, as well as Western Hockey League. So I think, and if you're really worried about it, maybe you go to the 2-3-2 format, but I think that even the 2-2-1-1-1 format limits travel. I'm with you. I think the ultimate goal is to have the best teams have the best advantage in the playoffs. And I, with all due respect to the Oshawa Generals and the North Bay Centennials and the Brantford Bulldogs, I think we can all agree that the London Knights and Saginaw Spirit were the two best teams in the league this year. And I would make a pretty strong case that Sioux was third. And that's how the points unfolded. So I know we can't just go by the points, but I think you can make a pretty strong argument that the top three teams were all in the West. So, and you get some newer matchups as well, which is something I've always advocated for. You don't want to see the same teams play the same teams again and again and again. I think there's intrigue to having those matchups mixed up. And in a league where the geography has Niagara playing in the East and Guelph playing in the West, and you look at a map and you could divvy it up a variety of ways, but it's not like the geography makes a ton of sense for the conferences right now anyway. So anyway, long-winded way of saying I'm all for the 1-16. I think it should be that way in the NHL as well. I just think it makes for better intrigue.
Yeah, and your point on geography is very well taken. I thought the same thing. I know we come across as biased because we are in Southern Ontario, but that's where most of the teams are clustered anyway. There's a few further outposts, but really it's a Southern Ontario and, you know, Northern Michigan, Pennsylvania hockey league. So, and I don't think anybody would argue the idea of the two best teams, let's say London and Saginaw, competing for the OHL championship, not just the Western Conference championship, if that's the way it goes. Anyway, we'll leave it there. I promise not to spend a lot of time on it, but it popped into my head. Something that we do all season long on this podcast is a prospect of the week. So sharing with you the player that we thought, who is draft eligible, had the best week in the Ontario Hockey League. When we get to the playoffs, we change prospect to performer. And in the interests of transparency and full disclosure, I'm telling you right now, I'm cheating like a son of a on this. I'm cheating, but sorry, live with it. Send me an email, ohlpodcast@rogers.com. With that said, Dansky, who do you have as your performer of the week?
Well, now you have me on the edge of my seat waiting to see how you're cheating here. So,
oh, I'm cheating so bad.
Well, I will just preface all of this by saying I love the performer of the week in the first round of the playoffs because there's 8 series and I probably had 12 to 15 names on my not so short list. So with all apologies to the variety of guys who I'll maybe mention after you've made your pick, not to steal your thunder, but the variety of guys who could have won it, I'm going with my boy Owen Beck in Saginaw, a goal and 5 assists in the first 2 games, crazy faceoff win percentage, delivering. I mean, this guy has pro quality is written all over them. Skating, 200-foot game, hard to play against. Some offense, both playmaking and finishing. He's what you want to get you through the playoffs. Obviously went to the Memorial Cup with Peterborough last year. Going to go to the Memorial Cup again this year with Saginaw, preferably through the front door for him. But I think just the statement he made in the first 2 games against an Owen Sound team that also showed up. They played hard in those 2 games. And Owen Beck was a big reason why Saginaw is coming out of that with a 2-game lead. So amidst a sea of qualified candidates, I'm going with Owen Beck, Mike. Who are you cheating with?
I can't argue that for 1 second. And when I looked at Owen Beck, I said, yeah, been there, done that. Show me something new, Owen Beck, 6 points in 2 games. You're not wrong. Of course, and it's a great selection. So I'm cheating in two regards here. One is I'm gonna focus directly on the games I've been able to watch with my own eyes from beginning to end. And I'm sorry, like you said, there are eight series. There are so many to pick from. So I'm given two strong honorables before I get to my pick. One honorable is actually a prospect, and I'm gonna give it to Luke Elenas, who came out like a house on fire in his first ever OHL playoff game, picked up two goals and an assist. We've been talking all season long about how he's been turning heads in the National Hockey League scouting departments. What a great way to start the playoffs, although he disappeared pretty much entirely in game number two. The other one I want to give an honorable mention to is my boy Nick Lardis. You know how much I loved him last season before he was drafted. I've loved him again this season. He's off for almost 3 months, and what does he do when he comes back to the Brantford Bulldogs in the first game of the playoffs? Two goals and an assist. So honorable mentions to both Elenas, who I got to watch, and Lardis, who I watched from afar. And now, as I give you my actual performer of the week, again, I'm cheating insofar as I'm being biased towards a series that I've been able to watch. But Dylan Edwards, like this guy, what a story Dylan Edwards is, right? He gets about two-thirds of a season with the Erie Otters last year, didn't really fit in, starts this season again in the OJ, right? Junior A hockey with the Toronto Patriots. And then what? Well, two things really happen. First, he goes to the World Junior A Hockey Challenge out east just before Christmas and puts up 10 points in six games. And all of a sudden, the Erie Otters like, well, like this guy, he's too good for the OJ. We got to bring him up to the Ontario League. And then his junior A coach says to the Otters, what are you doing playing this guy at center ice? He's a left winger, play him on the wing. So Stan Butler listens and plays him on the wing. And what happens? The kid gets 22 goals in 38 games. He's just a great story. And here through two playoff games versus the Kitchener Rangers, Edwards has three goals and an assist. So yes, I'm biased because I got to watch him. I love the story. I love the kid's game. And for me, Dylan Edwards is my performer of the week. So there. So complain all you want. I took three guys.
I'm not going to complain, Mike, because I don't mind admitting that Dylan Edwards was my runner-up. Like you said, terrific, terrific season, great story, and just continuing right on to the playoffs. So I'm glad you mentioned him because I actually felt bad that he got nudged out by Beck. But since you did it, do you mind if I do an honorable mention or two as well? Because
absolutely not.
You already nailed Luke Elenas. He was a great one. But I got to give a shout out to Coach Adelic and Sudbury. We see the performance you've put on, as well as a couple others. Matt Buckley, nice start as well in that series, which is tight. There's been a few kids. Dallin Wakeley's another one that was kind of on the short list. Terrific for North Bay so far. Anyway, I could go on. I'll stop there because you only gave a couple honorable mentions. But just needless to say, a lot of really good performances so far in the playoffs.
My memory is notoriously short and getting shorter as I age. So I can't remember if we dropped this footnote last week. And when I mentioned James Richmond in Mississauga earlier, talking about the injury to Ryerson Leanders, it made me think of Rob Wilson in Peterborough. So forgive me if we mentioned his 8-year contract extension last week, but I kind of joked that that's James Richmond territory because he's signed up long-term in Mississauga. There were some eyebrows raised. I just want to, first of all, Rob Wilson is a friend of the podcast, a former guest. You can go back and listen to the episode anytime. He tells an utterly fantastic story about the Eastern Conference Final versus North Bay last year. You'll love it. Go back, check out the podcast. But here's the thing. You can raise eyebrows if you want at that kind of contract offered a junior coach. I really dig the stability, Dan. This means, and we talked about how well Mike Oak as a general manager did at the trade deadline with Peterborough this year, setting the team up, building the foundation for what should be, could be, another championship run. So Wilson leads the team to an OHL championship last year, is going to have the chance to see at least one more cycle through. I'm sure there are out clauses if the pros come calling, but you just don't get this kind of stability in junior hockey. And I think, why not? You got a championship coach, you got a good foundation of players. Let's see if the championship coach can become a repeat championship coach. we know what stability has meant to the London Knights. And I'm not trying to equate Rob Wilson and Dale Hunter here, but I'm just talking about the stability that comes to an organization. And this popped into my head earlier tonight. Again, we're recording on Sunday, when I looked at the Brantford Bulldogs bench and I saw Jay McKee and Andreas Karlsson there, who now are coming up on 10 years together with both the Kitchener Rangers and the Bulldogs franchise in the OHL. I think that kind of consistency and stability matter. So there's a bit of a PS on this podcast episode, but kudos to Rob Wilson. And I think a pretty savvy move by the Peterborough Petes to offer that kind of stability.
You know, great point, Mike, to raise that, because it's really rare to see an 8-year contract candidate to coach at a junior level. And I did see some criticism of it saying, well, you sign yourself up for 8 years for a guy and you could be in real trouble if you have to fire him in year two. But I think when you've got a guy like Rob Wilson with the track record he has, and you talked about the stability, Mike. So now every kid coming into that franchise for the next several years knows what they're walking into. They know what coach they're getting. They know he's going to be there. And you have a coach that's motivated, because when you sign for that long too, it's on you. This franchise is yours. What the results you're going to get are now yours, because it's you bringing in these players. It's you developing them. It's you building this team. So I think that's a workable scenario for a lot of teams. I think you might see a bit more of it too, because to lure top quality coaches to this league, into junior hockey, you might need to commit to them a little longer, give them that stability, because otherwise they might look elsewhere. But yeah, it's an interesting deal, and kudos to Rob Wilson, the Peterborough Petes, for getting it done.
It is a fair criticism to point out that, you know, if it's not working out and you have to fire him after 2 years, you're in a heap of trouble. A good friend of mine, who also happens to be my broadcast partner these days and a former coach in this league and the National League, likes to say, just because you get an 8-year contract doesn't mean you're going to be coaching for 8 years, but it does mean you're going to be getting paid for 8 years. So bear that in mind. All right. It's been a great start to the playoffs. By next week, who knows, some of these series could be done already. We will keep you abreast of what's going on and offer our analysis of it as we go through. That guy over there is Dan Mahar. Find him on Twitter at Dan Mahar. My name is Mike Farwell at Farwell_OHL. Give us a like, subscribe, join the YouTube channel, find us on Instagram, send an email anytime, OHLpodcast@rogers.com. And thank you very much for being a listener to the OHL Podcast.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundel from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.